Hello, and welcome to the Family Pups Podcast. As you know, this is where we have conversations about the most commonly requested dog training and dog behavioral issues. It is the middle of March. We just had a pretty big snowstorm. Big days for us. She's like, where are you taking this? Anyways, what's going to be our topic today, Tanya?
Today we'll be talking about treats.
Treats. Dog treats, I imagine.
Dog treats, yes.
So when someone brings up dog treats, what's the first thing that comes up to your mind?
Well, when it comes to dog treats, I typically talk about why and how we are going to be using them during training, because typically that's the introduction to positive reinforcement training, even though we know that treats are not the only reward that we use. It's usually the easiest one that we start with just because most dogs love them. They're easy to exchange and it's easy to move on to another repetition. So my goal typically is to explain why and how and what type of treats and why and how for the different variety of treats as well.
And so when you start working with dog training clients, do you find that they already have some treats in their home, or you're kind of introducing treats to them for the first time? What's the average dog training client that you get in terms of their pre-knowledge of dog treats?
For the most part, people already have treats in their home, even if they've only been using their dog's kibble for training. I would say that they're pretty aware that treats, they can use treats in order to teach the dog to do certain things, or I guess in order to reward the dog while teaching them. So the thing that usually is more novel is the type of treats that I introduce once I show up, because, yeah, I typically tend to carry a bit of a higher value type of treat, just because it's easier for me. I work with all different clients, and when out and about, I need to have something really good. But I do try to have at least three different varieties of treats in my pouch and kind of have that medium and higher value. And because my goal is to keep things very healthy, or to keep my rewards very healthy, small in size, and nutritionally sound, I would say that kind of goes in the category of a higher value type of reward.
Yeah, we can go over, you know, what your definition of high value and low value is in a minute. But do you find that when you start training their dog, a dog that obviously they're having trouble training themselves, and you kind of introduce these treats that you have in your own bag that is time tested and client tested, do you find that the dogs just behave in a way that completely surprises the dog parent? What happens in that first introduction of these kind of more premium dog treats to a dog that obviously has never gotten a treat like that before?
I would say it depends. If it's just a consultation within their home, the difference in behavior may not be, or the result that we're achieving with the treat may not be as stark just because it's an environment without too many distractions. But I would say during our puppy classes, we can definitely see the difference between, let's say, a puppy parent has brought a certain type of treat to the class, which could be their kibble, which is fine. We can use kibble meals for training. It really is dependent on the dog and distractions and how motivated they are. But yeah, during classes, typically, let's say if they have kibble or something just kind of normal, usual, the dog may be getting all the time. They may be getting less of a response. And then when I pull something that is novel, that is higher value, I find that dog parents or puppy parents do get surprised by how much more motivated their dog seems to be to work for the treats that I'm presenting.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. So let's go to a term that I'm sure you've heard many times, and it's kind of related to what you were just talking about. And that phrase is, my dog or my puppy is not food motivated, right? So when you hear that, and especially in context to what you just said, do you believe that statement is actually true? Or to your point, maybe they've been trying kibble and for them, they've tried it a couple times, their dog kind of scoffs at it and they're like, hey, my dog is not food motivated. Or is it somewhere kind of in the middle? What is your take on that popular phrase?
In my opinion and in my experience, most of the dogs are actually food motivated, but there are other factors that play a role, whether they're able to take food in specific situations and environments. So the dog may be really fearful. So when you're afraid, if let's say you're out and about hiking and you think you saw a mountain lion, you're not going to stop and think about, oh, let me get one little snack before I continue walking so I can be all charged up in case that's a real mountain lion, right?
Sure, sure, sure.
So the dog may be really fearful. They may be overstimulated, meaning that all of their focus and attention may be on something else in the environment and the food is not such a priority. And actually, as we were talking a couple days ago, that was the case with our dog Zippo when we first fostered him. He loves food.
Yeah.
But in those early days when I would take him out and about and I would use very high value boiled chicken, which he would do anything for, but not in those days. In those days, he wasn't used to training. He wasn't understanding what he was supposed to do. And he was so overstimulated by squirrels and bunnies. So when a dog is overstimulated, we may be trying to present something, but they would ignore it and just be focused on whatever else is getting their attention. Or the dog may be very reactive. So if there is some sort of specific trigger that they're super focused on, they may not want to take the food because just like with fear and even, you know, a certain type of overstimulation where if we look at what's happening inside the dog, we know both for dogs and for humans, when we have more adrenaline and cortisol rushing through our systems, our appetite gets shut down.
Yeah.
So those are some instances where if people say my dog is not food motivated, but they have a dog that is fearful, maybe, you know, overly friendly or enthusiastic, or maybe overly reactive, then we may need to look at, okay, well, let's see how we can make it easier on your dog, teach them some skills, and then put them in those situations where we can use the food. Or we may need to experiment with different types of foods. What types of treats have you tried so far? Have you tried, you know, freeze-dried organs? Yeah. Have you tried all the gross, stinky stuff?
Yeah.
The single ingredient type of thing.
Yeah.
And even with that, like, what about fish? What about, you know, hearts?
Sure.
I don't know. So we definitely need to experiment a little bit. And sometimes, rarely, but it happens. It may be that, okay, well, we can do a mixture between food rewards and toy rewards because maybe, yeah, sometimes the dog will value, let's say, a certain type of engagement or play session more than they value eating food. So we can definitely adjust, but I find that for the majority of the cases, the dog is food motivated. We just need to teach the dog how to eat food in certain situations.
Okay, so another thing is the amount of treats, right? And I know that a lot of treat companies do their best to, let's say, outline how many calories per treat their treats have, right? So, but you might be in a place with new clients, let's say they just got a new puppy, and I know that you're giving the dog a lot more treats a lot more rapidly than maybe they're even used to, and maybe you're going to do that at least for the first couple of weeks of training them. So from a, let's say, a calorie count standpoint, from an appropriateness standpoint, from a am I overfeeding this puppy standpoint, what are your rules of thumb to make sure that you're using these treats to motivate them, but you're also not like overfeeding them? What are some of the ways you ensure that, and ways that you guide clients so that they don't do that either?
I usually suggest starting out by using the dog's meal, just their kibble.
Okay.
If they're eating kibble meals, uh-huh, because that's just easier. We know we're going to get a certain amount of reps in, and we know that that is going to be a food that the dog is going to receive anyway.
Yeah.
So when we're first starting with a puppy, or maybe just a newly adopted dog that doesn't have the skills, we are going to start training them indoors. And when we're training them indoors, we don't have as many distractions, so we can just go with their meals, because that for the most part will have the same function or will achieve the same result as motivating them.
Yeah.
So starting that way, where we need to have all these reps, where we're creating associations between words and actions, and where we're building muscle memory, we can just, and actually that's a tip that I give my clients in terms of creating a routine where they're taking the time from their day to actually train their dog. Mm-hmm. That could be for, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or just breakfast and dinner.
Yeah.
Because they know they have to give the dog the food, and that is also the time that they can go over all the skills that they're teaching their dogs. Now, if we're going out and about, let's say a couple weeks later, once we already have the skills and we're introducing higher value treats or rewards, we can be cognizant of how much treats we're giving. And if we say, hey, we're gonna have this mixture in our pocket or in our training pouch that has, let's say, some kibble and some high value treats, and we're going to use it accordingly, and that's going to be the dog's dinner, we can do that. So we can just kind of figure out portions and calories. And if we've only used the treats, we can certainly take out some of the kibble, mm-hmm, so that we are evening out the dog's calorie intake for that day or for that meal.
Okay, so let's talk about portion size, right? Sometimes you get a treat bag and they're of various size, right? Like they could be pretty big and they encourage you to cut it, or they're already pre-cut. So for you, when you get your dog to sit at home, or when you get your dog to come to you at the park, how do you communicate to the client, all right, this is an appropriate size every time you want to reward your dog? What do you tell them?
I typically say, and that is kind of like the standard in the field, but pea size,
okay.
Yeah, pea size, or the size of your pinky nail.
Okay,
everybody's pinky nail may be a little different in size though, but pretty small.
All right, pea size, love that. Okay, and another thing that I hear all the time, and I think we've talked about it a couple times too, is this idea that, it's an idea and also a phrase, a lot of clients say, when can I stop giving treats? At what point can I just expect my dog to do what I want when I want without having to reward him? Am I going to have to reward this dog forever? Is that something you hear a lot? And what do you typically say to at least get them to understand that they're working under certain assumptions, and you not only have to communicate what your point of view is, you kind of have to get them to understand why their maybe preconception is maybe a little wrong, maybe a little outdated, whatever. So you got to do a lot in that tiny moment of time. So what do you usually say in those cases?
I completely understand that we don't want to feel like we have to reward our dogs for every little thing that they do in the same way that we do in the beginning.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So typically I say that it will depend on first the behavior, second whether we can find some other life rewards in the environment in order to reward the dog with those instead of the food, and third, a certain category of behaviors that are maybe really difficult for the dog that we are actually going to need to continue rewarding. Mm-hmm. So for this last example, I usually say recall, come when called, maybe one of those skills, especially depending on what we're recalling our dogs away from, that I would suggest to continue to reward even though not every single time, mm-hmm. So that you continue to have a very strong response. And being mindful that when we are recalling our dogs, they need to make a decision to leave something very, potentially very interesting and exciting and fun behind in order to come to us. Mm-hmm. So thinking about what can I present as a reward for their recall so that it continues, as I said, it continues to be a very strong skill.
Yeah. Now, I think that's a very good point. And I don't disagree with you, but I think when most people are saying that phrase, they're not saying it because they have an understanding of, hey, you can ration these out over time as the dog learns. What I hear when I hear that phrase is there's just something that they don't like about the idea of having to give treats to get their dogs to do something, or even their kids or whatever. There's something abhorrent about that, and they kind of just want to get that part of the training kind of out of the way so that they could finally get to this utopia place where the dog is going to do everything they say whenever they say it, and they don't have to reward them because now they're finally trained.
Well, we have to figure out if that is realistic.
Yeah.
Because it really depends on what it is.
Yeah.
For example, with our dog, I definitely don't give him as many treats as I used to give him in the beginning when I was first training him. Do I bring treats with me? Yes, I do. But for example, he's really good at leave it. So oftentimes if there is something on the ground and I say leave it and he does, we just continue walking. It's not something that is difficult for him. It's very easy to move away from the thing. And I find that that is not a behavior that I need to continue to reward. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, you know, with our specific dog, knowing that he has tendencies to bark at other dogs, I may be more likely to reward him when he sees another dog in order to prevent the reaction. And I think it would just be that example of taking it case by case.
Yeah.
If your dog, you know, if we're working on leash skills and then your dog figures out how to walk on a loose leash, you can just keep walking. You don't have to reward your mm-hmm. dog. But if you know that, you know, they're super friendly and when another dog approaches, you know, they may want to kind of pull and jump towards them, you may need to reward a type of sit-stay behavior mm-hmm. that is something that continues to be difficult for that dog. Mm-hmm. So I understand that we want to be kind of done with the training And we could be, depending again on the skill and the situation, but things are probably going to come up as we continue, you know, living and learning with our dogs. And I think that's the beauty of going through a training process and knowing how to train your dog, because then you become more aware of what's the in the environment, how is my dog interacting with it. And if I don't like something, what can I ask my dog to do instead? And then getting into the habit of rewarding that, and also knowing what my dog is good at and kind of feeling confident about their skills, and, you know, just using some praise, petting, some love or nothing at all, and just kind of continue on with their lives.
No, I like that answer. I mean, I only bring it up because, you know, when we are out walking, or anyone else out is walking their dog, there are kind of two situations where you're going to get people to kind of give you unsolicited advice on how you're treating or living with your dog. One is if you let your dog poo on the ground and you don't pick it up or whatever, you're going to get a mouthful when someone sees you do that, obviously. And then, yeah, there are other situations, as you've mentioned before, where you might be just training your dog with treats or going off to the side, giving him treats, and someone's going to pass by and give you some constructive feedback or criticism that, hey, you're bribing your dog. And, you know, do you hear that kind of often? I just find it funny that that's one of those very specific things where some people might be like, oh, here's my moment to give this person I've never met some advice about how to live with their dog.
Yeah, yeah. We actually have a neighbor who's kind of made a comment a couple of times when I would be training my dog to walk past their house, which their dog just barks from behind the fence. Uh-huh. And then he says my dog is spoiled because, you know, he's walking, he's paying attention to me, where his dog is barking from behind a fence, and I need to be engaging my dog in training because of that. And I just tell him, well, he's actually really well looked after. Because it just, you know, people are going to give their opinions regardless. And to me, I would rather be rewarding my dog for what I want them to do than jerking on the leash for, you know, what I don't want them to be doing. And this is my choice and my decision. And, you know, if you've chosen to not use food and jerk on the leash, that's okay too. But just kind of knowing that you have a choice. Mm-hmm. You can either reward good behavior, you can punish and suppress what you don't want, but if you do nothing at all, you're not going to create a behavior change.
Wow.
So great. So let me introduce our guests today. Our guests today are Karen Schwichtenberg and Ilya Seglin, and they are the co-founders of Fig and Tyler, a premium dog treat company based in New York City. Longtime friends, they often talked about how hard it was to find high-quality, healthy dog treats made from recognizable ingredients. So 5 years ago, they took the leap and started the brand and named it after their beloved dogs. So without further ado, introducing Karen Schwichtenberg and Ilya Seglin to the podcast.
I'm glad that we can get you guys on. I hope you guys are excited to be here, because we're definitely excited to have you guys on. So let's start with this. So when we go to your website, figandtyler.com, you mentioned that you, quote, created Fig and Tyler for pet parents who, like us, were overwhelmed by the vast number of treat choices. We were looking for something healthy and made from recognizable ingredients, which was not always easy to find, end quote. So as such, could you take us back to those times? You know, what year was it? What were dog treats like back then? And why didn't you like them?
So old. What was it like 5 years ago?
That's true. I mean, 5 years ago was what? Like, I guess a little bit pre-pandemic. pre-pandemic.
It was very much pre-pandemic.
But having said that, like research on pet nutrition, everything is grown exponentially over the last three years. So 5 years,
I agree.
I'm kind of joking, but 5 years has been a big time period.
Totally. Mm-hmm. You know, but I guess from my standpoint, it's just like you saw something you didn't like and that you wanted to get something better. You decided to just venture out and create your own. So you must have had a vision back then of what you wanted to put out into the world. Take us back to that time and what you guys were talking about and and what that vision was.
Karen, why don't you start?
See, this is a good partnership. He hands it off to me and I'll hand it back to him. Well, you know, it all comes down to dogs, right? I think that's where all our passion lies. And I assume the same for you, why you kind of got into a small business. So I feel like we have to almost start with the dogs. And so Ilya, it was an experienced pet parent. And so he's got Tyler. By the way, Tyler and Fig are real dogs. So Tyler is Ilya's dog. Fig is my dog. And I'll make this really short because I know we don't have a lot of time. We had no intention of getting our dog, me and my husband. We were on a vacation and there was a local rescue group at the airport. A hurricane had come through and they had a relationship with Animal Haven here in New York City. So they had all these cute little puppies mm-hmm. in duffel bags asking mm-hmm. people to carry them back, because once you carry through customs, Animal Haven would pick it up and then it had a better chance of adoption. So, you know, you're never supposed
to. And you were in Antigua at that time,
yes, correct.
Karen? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so, like, your mom is right when she says never accept anything from strangers at an airport, but we kind of did. So we took this little dog, signed it over and said it was ours, walked through customs, you know, got really nervous, and then, oh, its little face. And so at about 30,000 feet, we just fell in love and we said, it's destiny. I assume that's their scam, maybe. Maybe they pick people who look vulnerable and say, take this dog, they know they will adopt it. So we brought him home and we just weren't prepared. Like, so I turned to Ilya, who is, you know, a good friend and a good pet owner. And he just kind of helped me out. It was my Sherpa. But when we first started looking at treats, you know, I kind of flipped the label and, you know, it was all this stuff that I just had never seen, ever heard of. And at the time, single ingredients weren't really a big thing at the time. Mm-hmm. Ilya, this is where I pass it off to Ilya.
Yeah. And I think so. We probably had a similar experience as far as seeing what's in treats. And you know, initially when you first start, you know, your journey of pet ownership, you get a trainer because you need to have your dog mm-hmm. house trained and then yeah. teach them some manners. You start training and then like you think a treat's a treat and you just feed them and feed them and feed them. And then you get like diarrhea episodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like what is actually going into their stomachs? And so that's when Karen and I started talking and you realize you kind of have to go back to basics and understand like what is a good ingredient? Like we yeah. think about our food in terms of quality ingredients that we put into our mouths that, you know, mm-hmm. if you have children, how you think about feeding your children, shouldn't we have the same approach for dogs? That's kind of how the journey started. And then we both had experiences with trainers who, you know, are pretty big authority. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure Tani, you had the experience, you walk into someone's house and they ask you, what do I do? And everything you tell them they do. So we did a lot of kind of like focus groups with trainers, talk, you know, to get their input, like what's effective for dogs? You know, how do you think about the hierarchy of treats? How do you think about ingredients? How do you think about calories? How do you think of treats as part of the overall kind of like food intake that the dog has? And so we went through all these steps to figure out what's the best treat that we could bring to pet parents. That was our journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, it was years ago reading a book. It's called Canine Nutrigenomics. And it was all about how food obviously interacts with genes and some history behind dog foods. And it really brought a lot of light to how, you know, it's not very regulated what mm-hmm. goes into pet right. food, the ingredient list, the byproducts, the chemicals. And I was kind of mind blown by by that book, because I didn't suspect that something so important would be so little regulated. And I remember really kind of thinking about being mindful. And as you said, like sometimes you do want to do the best by your dog, but then you turn the back where you have the ingredient list and there's just so much. And you just wonder, do we need to have so many ingredients in a simple dog treat? So I remember then turning to more of like that boiled chicken. I was like, all right, well, I'm just gonna buy some, you know, chicken breast and just boil it and then give it to the dog. Mm-hmm. So then I was walking around with a little cooler just to make sure that I keep it, you know, cool. And
you're like the chicken lady, right?
I was a chicken lady for quite some time. And then
the trail of dogs, yeah, following her wherever she goes.
Exactly. Yes. The Pied Piper. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, I have to say that I over time did see a change both on the market, like pet parents becoming more aware of giving their dogs healthier options, you know, more of these like human grade dog subscription foods popping up, as well as the treats. And, you know, I love your guys' treats, and I don't need a cooler for them, and I can have a really great variety. So just kind of getting more of the freeze-dried single ingredient treats on the market has just made such a huge difference for us dog trainers, because we can both feel good about what we're giving to our clients. We can explain why we are giving, you know, the single ingredient, talk about nutrition and what they're intaking, but also knowing that it's a really high value, and just having that available has been a game changer. So you've done really good for the industry.
That's nice to hear. Back to your point about kind of the regulation, like if you look at the FDA, they basically say it shouldn't be harmful, it should be safe. They have some requirements around labeling, and they talk to the sanitary conditions in which it's created. So that's a very limited framework. So you say, you know, safe and not harmful. There's a lot of leeway in that.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So that gets to your point. So that can be confusing. And you said, you know, like dogs eat with their, well, they eat with their mouth, but they also eat with their nose. And humans, you know, it's about the eyes. So if you ever see something like artificial coloring in it, that's put in for us, for the humans, not for the dog. The dog doesn't care about what color it is. So that's just, that's just unnecessary. And there's, you know, other unnecessary ingredients in there. So when we've been talking about single ingredients, I don't know, I assume most people know what that is, but it's interesting because when we sometimes talk about our treats, people look at them and go, well, what's in it? And we're like, well, this is single ingredient, raw freeze dried chicken. They go, but what's in it? Like, yeah. Single ingredient raw. So single ingredient literally is 100% one thing. And we do proteins. Some of our some other people in the market do proteins as well. And then there's really two ways to do it, because as you said, you cook the chicken. You can't go around carrying around raw chicken in your pocket. You'll have, you know, even more dogs following you. But you know, we freeze dry it. So basically it's a process. If people aren't familiar with it, it's like a high powered vacuum, to think of it, which freezes the protein, takes all the moisture out. And then it's really shelf stable. This stuff can last forever. Plus the freeze drying process, it seals in the flavor and the nutrients. So it's really all the benefits of raw without the the inconvenience. There's people that do air drying or dehydration as well too. And that's a similar process, a little different. They use heat for that. It's shelf stable, but it's not as long as freeze dried. The only problem with heat is whenever you generate heat, it takes some of the nutrients out. And so that's why we decided to go with the freeze drying process.
Okay. So, you know, you took us back to the early days. I think we can all understand that we might have a moment of insight around something that we'd like to do in the marketplace. And maybe we even have the experience to go into that. And maybe we have a friend that is a colleague, or you feel like you have complementary skills, but a lot of ideas die at that point as well. And so what gave you the confidence to move beyond this? Isn't this a cool idea stage, or the market needs this stage to like actually team up with one another? And especially, you know, that it's not only the confidence, but you know that just to even get started, it's going to take some work. It's going to take a tremendous amount of work. So what was that point in which you kind of stepped over and said, let's do this together? How did you manage that? What was that time like? What was that decision like?
I'm just going to start
two
up by
bottles
saying,
of wine.
I was going to say the same thing. A lot of great ideas come over a few beers and a few glasses or bottles of wine. But
yeah.
I need the second session to actually like, are we really doing this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I don't know. Do you want to take this?
Realistically, like if you sort of think you have a good idea and you have a differentiated idea, you figure out how do you actually make it happen, and you just start doing it. Mm-hmm. I don't think we overanalyzed it terribly.
And that's one of the things you have to analyze it to a point. Is it financially feasible? You have to figure out what the risk is. Like if we do this for 5 years and be practical about it and think if we lose this much, because you are going to lose, you know, most businesses fail in the first 5 years. Is that going to screw us up? Like, are we willing to both accept that? And then after that, once you look at the downside and you logically think about it, then you have to take a leap of faith, because if you think about everything that can go wrong, it's
yeah.
Nobody would ever do anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what I seem to be hearing is that you guys do experience some level of self-doubt amongst yourself just naturally, and that's something that you overcome. Mm. It just seems like you're like, oh, you have a great idea. You just follow all the steps and do what you need to do, and you got a business running.
Yeah, well, you know, to go back a little bit to what I said before, you know, we did focus groups with trainers to understand like what, you know, what do they care? So we had a sense from just surveying the market and seeing what was out there at the time that we had a product that, you know, trainers wanted. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a lot of options, you know, similar to Tanya. They were kind of like, you know, boiling their chicken and cutting it up if they really wanted superior quality product. So we saw a fit. So then it was just like, how do we actually bring this product to people?
Yeah.
And how do we make consumers aware of this?
Okay.
So then you start thinking through those steps. So we knew that there was a need for this, that there would be demand for this product.
But even though you know there's a demand and you look at the competition and you have to do your research, a little bit of self-doubt, I call it pragmatism, maybe that's the right word, it's good and healthy because a lot of things can happen. So I just think you have to go in with mindful expectations of what could happen. And in a way, it's great because it keeps you prepared, right?
Yeah.
You think of the worst case scenarios and then you're ahead of them. But then it's also finding the right partner too. Like we're complementary, and I in terms of our skill sets, which makes it productive. But then when it really comes down to the core, it's like, do you have same values with the person that you're partnering with, in terms of, you know, what you want the customer experience to be like, and you know, I know we'll always do the right thing, and Ilya's similar. So it's like a marriage sometimes.
I mean, let's dig into that. I mean, let's dig into that, right?
Not, like, not too much.
To be clear, we're not married.
We're not married.
Your work husband and your work wife. Yeah. We can call it that.
Exactly.
But let's dig into this founder story, right? How did you meet? What were you doing before founding the company? And let's dig into what you were just saying, Karen. There is something about Ilya and there was something about Karen that you knew was going to be a match in terms of values, maybe work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Dissect that a little bit for me about why you were confident that you looked into each other's eyes and like, oh, we're gonna do this together and succeed. Like, tell me about that a little bit.
So Karen, why don't you start with your background?
We're both gonna pause and let each other go.
We're just gonna stare into each other's eyes.
Yeah. Until we figure out the answer through osmosis.
Yeah.
We were both hard workers, I think, was it. And we were both ambitious and
you know,
what were you doing before?
Yeah,
or
so,
what are you
so
still
we were
doing?
Both working in the world of consulting. So I was working for retail companies, helping develop strategies, doing some work in sustainability, market growth for consumer product goods. And so that was for a good variety of different companies. And that's where I met Ilya, and that's where we kind of started thinking, well, we'd seen some other companies do very well, and we always thought in the back, again, over the wine, always thought it would be a good idea. And as Ilya said, you know, we thought there was an opportunity in the dog treat space. We know how passionate pet parents are, and so are we about it. But then we kind of like mapped up our skills, and I don't even think we literally mapped out our skills. It's not like we got a list together. You know, I'm a little OCD. I'm not that, you know, but we were very complementary. I tended to be more on the creative side. He was operational, more financial. So it was two puzzle pieces that I think fit. But again, I really do believe it comes down to the relationship thing. It's similar values, good communication. It sounds cheesy, right?
Oh, there's nothing cheesy about that. I don't think. Yeah. Those are important things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you got to have like that same kind of, you know, really the North Star, like, are you both shooting towards the same thing? And
exactly.
That's a little like, you know, the mission statement or however you want to, you know, what are we going to view winning as, you know, what is our ultimate goal? And again, that never changes. It's like, it's like the interview question. Where do you want to be in 5 years, 10 years? It doesn't change.
Yeah.
How you get there may vary, but I think that was kind of it. And we both aligned on that. I don't know if there's anything you want to add.
Yeah, no, as you know, I think the biggest thing is like, what do you, you know, the values that you assign to the product, to the customer experience, to, you know, sort of, are you aligned on the go-to-market strategy? You know, how do you support that? You know, we obviously have other people helping us. You know, how do you treat people who help you? You know, that was very important. It's, you know, at a certain point, it becomes more than just the two of us.
Yeah.
But in a world where it's so easy to take shortcuts and work in a business,
and
sometimes people don't even notice it. It's a slippery slope, right? And so we kind of aligned early on, you know, what our values.
And what about from your perspective, Ilya? What kind of things are you not as good at that Karen is really good at?
This interview's going this way.
No, I mean, Karen is amazing at sort of, you know, marketing is not the right word, but sort of what's the look and feel of the brand is, what's the language of the brand? How do we talk to our consumers, our trainers, you know, the broader community of, you know, people who work at shelters and who work with rescue organizations? You know, because let's be realistic, today the consumer kind of gets a feel for your brand from social media.
Of course.
I think if you go and you check out our Instagram and, you know, the videos or the, you know, the image posts that we use, I mean, that all comes out of Karen's head. You know, those are all her ideas. I'm not as creative. So she's amazing at that.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the branding of Fig and Tyler. I think that you guys have done a great job with how you draw the dogs and, you know, how the dogs like present the treats with, you know, going fishing when there is, you know, fish treat. And they're all so fun to look at. They're all so different. And I think that's really unique. I really don't see this type of branding on trees that are out there. And like for me, when it comes to recommending a product and items to my clients, I do want them to have that more unique type of feel that doesn't just feel like, you know, mass production, but it feels like someone has put some creativity and thought into the process and what they're putting out there in order to, to tell their stories and also to create the branding that's leading those products ahead. And
like communicating values.
Communicating values, a certain, you know, I don't know, a certain sense of fun into
whimsy,
it.
Yeah.
I think you've done a really great job presenting that. And I know that when my clients receive the Fig and Tyler treats and they open them, they're going to get a product that I feel good about as well. So I think you've done an amazing job. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Karen, maybe, you know, talk a little bit about, because we, you know, we always, particularly from the beginning, you know, we needed to find that balance of being a playful consumer mm-hmm. brand. We're a treats company, right? But we're very serious about product. Like, that's not, you know, we're a little bit kind of like party on the front, but business on the back. if you think of our bags, right? And by the way, that's the experience you have as a consumer.
Yeah.
But Karen, talk about finding that balance.
Yeah, so like one of the things we struggled with is the playful whimsy, I guess, as you described, and also being authority, because we're selling, you know, important stuff.
Yeah.
Like we're selling human grade meat, freeze dried. It's like kind of, you know, you think of the top of the treat pyramid, which I assume you talk about in other podcasts. Yes. We're at that top little, you know, you know, triangle. So how do you meet that balance to be, you know, fun and whimsical, but still an authority?
Yeah.
And so, especially when people only get maybe a few second glance at the product. So that's something we really struggled with the imaging and the wording, trying to find it. Because you don't want to be too cutesy, because if you're too cutesy, it's fun and frivolous, and it's not.
You want to be taken seriously.
You want to be an authority.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting when you talk about the packaging, like we really spent a lot of time on that, because we're only sold on our website and in a handful of trainer studios. People don't get to interact with the product on the shelf. So if you get to see it, first of all, if you're come to the website, obviously see it, but the only time you really interact with it in the real world is when you see somebody either holding it or it's on a counter.
Yeah.
So this is kind of branding 101, but if you're in somebody's house, you look around the house, you check what's going on. We want it to be maybe cute enough or interesting enough that, first of all, it would be noticed, somebody might pick it up.
Yeah.
So thought went into kind of the design as well, mm-hmm. because again, because they're not going to be seeing it on a lot of store shelves.
Yeah, like creating conversation, like in that context. Yeah, yeah.
And we'll be back right after this break. Are you looking for an exceptional veterinary care experience for your cat or dog? Goodheart Animal Health Centers are here for all your pet's needs. Their happy, helpful team provides full service care for all stages of your pet's life. Separate areas for dogs and cats help keep checkups low stress for people and their pets. New clients receive a personalized pet name tag and a bottle of wine as a thank you for giving them a try. Goodheart has two locations in Denver, at Broadway and Alameda, and in Cherry Creek. For more information, visit goodheart.vet. Now back to the episode. So cool. So much there, so much interesting. I feel like I could talk about you two forever, but let's do a little quick pivot. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about...
Charles, it's a party of one.
Let's talk about dog treats and what mm-hmm. is a dog treat, right? So I was just trying to think in my head, like, let's say, and this is weird, it's going to sound weird coming from me, but let's say I freeze dry some cow eyes, right?
Yeah.
And I label them as dog treats and then just sell it on a website. Can I do that? I guess my question is, what are the minimum requirements I need to meet in order to even position something as a dog treat? Or are there any requirements at all?
It's like human treats. Are there any requirements around human treats? Like you could grab an apple, a bag of Doritos. There's no legal definition
okay.
of what a
That's
treat is
part.
And what a treat
yeah.
isn't.
Mm.
Yeah. So we're a little bit too deep. So, you know, we really look at it through, you know, comparable to how we think about human food. Mm-hmm. As Karen said, like a piece of apple could be a treat, but also a bag of Doritos can be a treat, right?
Yeah.
So,
nothing wrong with Doritos, by the way.
Yeah.
or like a sugar-loaded candy bar. That's a treat as well.
Yeah.
So for us is, you know, again, making that same analogy for dogs, the bare minimum for us is it has to be human grade quality. So mm-hmm. If you know, if the ingredient, it's the same quality that you would buy in a supermarket. So mm-hmm. we start there. And then you think about, well, what do you want your dog to bite on? Do you want it to be high quality meat, or do you want it to be sugar loaded, whatever bloated crap with, you know, with chicken meal or beef, something that has nothing to do with actual, you know, protein. Mm-hmm. So that's how we thought about it. You know, it's because it's scary. There is no regulation for treats, really. Mm-hmm. And again, sort of making the human analogy, like you can dehydrate an apple. That's a treat.
Yeah.
Is it effective in training? No. Mm-hmm. Is it, well, I would say not as much as meat, right?
Yeah.
Does it motivate the dog the same way? No. Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, should dogs have some apples? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A dog's carnivores and really prefer meat? Yes. Yeah. Which is why they react to meat in a different way. Mm-hmm. So that's how we thought through that. But again, the bare minimum for us is the quality of ingredients has to be the same as it is for humans. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we started out kind of thinking, you know, like we wanted to be like an online butcher shop for dogs.
Yeah.
Because we knew we wanted to focus on the human grade. And then we go, well, what do dogs meet? Well, love, obviously meat. That's a given. So we know that would be tasty and be effective, mm-hmm. you know, when used as treats. And then, as Ilya said, we could do all sorts of meat treats. But maybe your grandmother said this to you, like, not my grandmother, but somebody once told me that you should always look at an ingredient label. And if it's something that your great grandmother wouldn't recognize as food, mm-hmm. then it ain't probably food. So then it comes back to, like, you know, really simple. And we've kind of gone a little full circle. So we thought, well, what is simpler than just meat? Or just fish?
So I guess what I'm hearing is that in this no regulation environment, particularly for dog treats, it's each company's, it's going to be whatever their vision of what they view a good dog treat is. And you're kind of left as a consumer to kind of fend for yourself, to kind of be able to know, to look for certain things to be able to make an informed decision. Is that correct?
It's tough, but it's true. It's the same with, it's the same. Everybody has to take responsibility, I guess. Same with your own food choices, right?
Yeah.
You know, you should really look, and I'm not always the best at it, but, you know, you should look at the back of labels and try to figure out what's good. The other interesting thing I think is for pet parents, and again, I didn't really think about this until, you know, when I was going through training and my little cute puppy was still cute, but he was going like this. Is the calories. And I had no concept of how many calories a dog should have. And a dog is like a bottomless pit. Like they could eat forever.
All day. Yeah.
So like even, you know, if there's any takeaway for anybody listening to this, there are like online calculators just to go online, you know, figure out the weight, the activity, and just figuring out how many calories per day. Like our dog recently, we had him on a food and we were following the back of the ingredients. And we took him to the vet because we couldn't figure out why he was putting on weight. It was a new food. And we told him how much we were feeding him. And he's like, no way. Even though it was on the back of the bag, it was still just too much food. Mm-hmm. So I would just kind of figure that out, because then that's a framework how you start thinking about food and treats. Mm-hmm. I think there's like an adage out there that 10% of your calories should come from treats. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you're training, it could be a little more, and then just be really thoughtful. But because there's a lot of great foods out there, like my pup loves peanut butter, and we have them on pills in the morning and in the afternoon as well too. And even peanut butter, it's like one tablespoon is like anywhere from 90 to 100 calories. Mm. It's shocking when you start reading it. And by the way, and I think most people know this, but I always love putting this in anyways. You know, when you buy peanut butter, if your dog loves peanut butter, stick with the good peanut butter. Don't go with the diet, because, you know, there's birch sugar out there and there's xylitol. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
Which are toxic for pups. So just be careful. But yeah, just it's amazing when you start looking at some of these ingredients. Mm-hmm.
A fun fact is that one of my clients actually tried your guys' goat cheese treats.
<Yeah.
laughs> We were having a training session, and, you know, she was
you
like...
You mean she ate it?
Yeah, she's like, yeah. I tried it. She said it said human grade, and it smelled good, so I just decided to give it a try.
Well, Karen, maybe this is the part where you should talk about human grade and what it means for us and what it means for humans.
Yeah, that's good, and that's sweet, and yes, I've had the cheese too. I won't lie. So we do meatballs as well too that you can eat. They're a little dry, but you can eat them.
Yeah.
But the cheese is good. So so the process of freeze drying is it's still raw meat. So it is still raw meat that's freeze dried. Mm. So you'll see on the back of all of our freeze dried products, not for human consumption, mm-hmm. because humans, you know, animals can process raw meat. So even though you're dehydrating it, it's still raw meat.
Yeah.
So humans, it's not recommended to eat raw chicken hearts or beef liver. So we say do not eat. But the cheese is a little different because it's cheese. And same with some of the dehydrated stuff. Like we have a few products like our steak and stuff. It's like jerky. You know?
Wait.
So you can eat it.
You're talking about, let's say, the chicken parts and stuff. Like, are humans not able to digest it? Or, like, I think everyone knows that, like, raw chicken can't be eaten because of, let's say, bacteria that might be on it. So is it a bacterial issue, or like our stomachs can't handle that?
Well, it's a bit of both, because stomachs can't handle the bacteria.
Does the bacteria stay on the meat after it's freeze-dried?
No, it has no moisture, so it has no place to kind of like live.
Bacteria needs moisture to grow.
Okay.
And the very act of taking the moisture out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just like you wouldn't go, you know, when you go into a supermarket and you look at the meat counter, there's raw meat there, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have bacteria. It's been inspected for that. But you wouldn't just cut off a piece of chicken breast and bite it right then and there.
Sure.
Which is what our freeze-dried treats fundamentally are. You just don't see the moisture around it.
Yeah.
You would cook it first.
Yeah.
Dogs can't process that because they're, you know, like when they first put it in the mouth, it, you know, there's a, you know, they process bacteria differently. Their track is much shorter, so it travels through the system in a different way that it does for humans. That's why we say it.
But to be clear, it seems like freeze drying does the bacteria killing that cooking chicken would do as well. It's just a different process of killing bacteria.
Totally.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. And then what freeze drying, so obviously bacteria is killed. And then what freeze drying does is it doesn't provide the space for bacteria to come back and kind of live and develop because there's very little moisture.
And so just to be clear, when we talk about human grade meat,
it's
at the input in of the start of the process. So the meat is USDA inspected, same stuff that you would get in the store. The treats, that doesn't mean that you can.
That makes sense.
Can eat
that. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So tell your clients.
Yeah.
Cheese is okay in moderation, but.
Yeah, don't be eating these treats, guys, or, you know. Yeah.
No, but I think that was good to discuss because sometimes when we think about human grade, like if I get one of those, you know, dog subscription meals that has like quinoa and boiled chicken and broccoli, like should I be eating it? Wasn't this an instance with Serena Williams where they brought her dog food and she tried it and then she was sick?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I remember this story. It was happening like around, I don't know, you know, one of the tennis tournaments and
anyways, don't be eating this stuff, guys. Don't be eating this stuff. I think that's where we're netting out here.
You're welcome to rehydrate it and cook it.
Oh,
then
yeah,
you can
yeah.
eat it.
Go for
okay,
it.
Okay, okay, okay.
Then
you got a few hours on your hands.
And then you can put it on a charcuterie board, have some friends over, have some wine, you'll be fine.
Exactly.
All right, so let's talk about the process. So obviously you guys seem like very capable, confident people with inklings of self-doubt, which you get over, but like, what was the process to get this business off the ground? What came surprisingly easy? What came surprisingly challenging? And how was this experience different from, let's say, the 9-to-5 making PowerPoint presentations, creating frameworks side of your past business?
It's interesting because all the components that go into running a very large multinational business, you know, with a few exceptions, you have to actually do all that stuff in a small business. So you have to think about your clients, your segmentation, what their needs are. You think about the product, the manufacturing, the production. It's all the same aspects of work, obviously on a different level, but it's just so all encompassing. Mm. And I don't think we were naive about that going in, but when you're hit with it, and again, working with a larger company, you have, oh, let's talk to this team of people who has to own and is responsible for that.
Yeah. Or delegate it to someone and you'll review it, but
you quickly become, let's put it this way. I felt like very confident in working in bigger organizations, but then when you realize you have to do it all yourself, it's like, whoa, this is a lot to take on. But you know, again, you work really hard to find trusted partners out there and people with a similar mindset that you can work with. And it takes a while. Like I know when we started, I just want everything to get going. Let's go. Let's hit whatever we need to do. But it's you got to be patient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the benefits of starting this business sort of when we did, having had experience, you know, working for other companies and consulting at other companies, is one confidence that you do have is you can fit whatever problem you have coming your way. You're confident that you can find the solution. You may not know the answer, but you will figure it out.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we approached it, whether it was, you know, finding suppliers, you know, people who can get the meat of the quality that we want, you know, people who do freeze drying. We obviously work with partners. It's a, you know, it's an expensive process. So, you know, we work with others, getting the website off the ground. You know, Karen does all the ideation for social media, but obviously, you know, you have partners on that front as well. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing you can say to yourself, I can figure it out.
Yeah.
So if you have that attitude,
it's going to be your mantra.
Yeah.
Deep breath. Yeah. And you know this too, because you guys, you run a small business too. Every now and then you just go deep breath. It'll come.
It'll work.
Yeah. Walk around the block, come back.
Yeah.
But were there some challenges that, you know, despite your best efforts and despite your best capabilities, you're like, wow, that is way harder than I thought.
Karen,
it was
can
gonna
I
be.
Give can I give one example? When we first launched, like first couple of months, I swear to God, we couldn't. So we use Postal Service and UPS to come pick up our packages. We couldn't get Postal Service to come and pick up packages. So you promise people, you place the order today, we'll ship it by the end of the day.
Disappointing.
You know, and then like, and you've spoken to the post office and you've put in the request and you've done all the paperwork that's necessary and they don't come. Mm-hmm. And then you're like literally bringing boxes of product to the post office to drop it off.
Yeah.
You think everything's going to be smooth and it, you know, you work
and it's
out
tough because, you know, you're not a big client. So you're not a big client of some other companies. So you're at the very, very bottom and low priority.
Yeah.
And when something happens over there, you know, let's not worry about these guys.
Yeah.
So that is tough to get over.
Yeah.
You know, but
you find a solution.
Find a solution. The solution in this case is walking to the post office.
Yeah. and now that you are at, you know, 5 years in, I'm sure there's some vision of what you guys are going to be at 10 years, 15, 20 years, you know, sipping on Mai Tais at some like nice island or something like that. But like,
you're more, that's a nice ambition.
But I love that image.
Yeah. What was I gonna ask?
You could just stop there. That's a great image. We can just keep that in our
that's
head.
That's our goal too. Our vision.
Yeah. Maybe you're getting yours confused up with what ours should be. You're projecting.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm projecting a little bit. Sorry, guys.
Totally,
you are not me. I am not you. I get it.
Okay.
I'm gonna come around back to that question. I had a doozy there. All right. So let's talk about treats, and let's talk about. You know, sometimes I think people view treats just by the word as candy, extra, not necessary, a nice to have. So, you know, I think it could be a challenge for companies like yourselves where you're trying to educate the market too, right? Like it's easier when the market's already educated. But yeah, I think a lot of people view treats as something optional as opposed to when someone says dog food, you're like, okay, I got to get it at these very prescribed intervals. So what was your approach to like educate and overcome this assumption? I saw you kind of nodding your heads in terms of people kind of treating treats that way. So what was your approach to overcome that? Because I imagine that it's not easy.
Yeah, treats is the word that's out there. Like in a perfect world, I would say the definition of small morsels of food. Yeah. You know, it's you know, it should be. And again, we talk healthy, and for humans, sometimes they have the connotation that healthy is bad, like, ugh, it tastes terrible. For dogs, you know, meat is good. They love it. So it's healthy and good. So I think we translate the word treat, some folks do, into that, you know, it's unnecessary and frivolous in that association. So I'd love to be able to change the definition, but it's out there. There's nothing you can do. I don't know, Ilya, what did you think?
Yeah, and then when you think about training, you know, if you have a puppy or you're trying, you know, you're doing agility training or whatever, nose work, you know, treats are food rewards. You know, mm-hmm. none of us would work for free, so why should the dog?
Yeah.
And so how do you, you know, what do you reward them with?
Yeah.
You know, if they put in an hour of work in the agility ring, they want to be rewarded, and
yeah.
they don't want, you know, a little piece of broccoli.
Yeah.
They want a little bit of, you know, fresh meat.
Yeah.
So that's how we think about mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm. And again, we were very influenced by, as we said at the beginning, like when we went into this, we were very influenced by, you know, trainers that we'd had exposure with
mm-hmm.
and that use this, it's a tool, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Tanya, I don't exactly. know, could you do your job without it? It's like, you know, you could. Can you talk about maybe the role they play for you? And I don't want to put you on the spot. But.
No. I mean, I can talk about treats all day long. I think that, yeah, it's just kind of similarly, you know, treats. People sometimes think that treats can be optional or training can be optional. And it obviously depends on the dog and mm-hmm. what you have going on with your dog's behavior in order to make the best choices. But I think that even if you're not necessarily needing to train your dog, you still would want to, like, give them something nice from time mm-hmm. to time just because they get so happy about mm-hmm. it. And yeah, as a trainer, I am very glad and happy to see positive reinforcement training really kind of start to be more of what people know about
and what people want.
What people want, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. More of a main way of training versus, you know, some of the more traditional approaches that are much more heavier on tools, suppression of behaviors without necessarily like focusing on teaching skills and rewarding skills in order to mm-hmm. get more of those skills. So when it comes to food rewards, it's just the easiest way for us to provide that positive feedback and motivation in order to get more of that behavior. It's just as simple as that. And it's very easy as well. So if we have that option, I, you know, personally don't see why I wouldn't use it to my mm-hmm. advantage, because mm-hmm. and maybe even saying use it to my advantage, it doesn't sound maybe as...
It's productive, though.
Yeah,
it's
productive. It is productive because...
Dogs are food motivated. We are so lucky dogs are food motivated.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, dogs are needing to learn how to navigate our human world and our space. And unless we teach them, they're going to be doing dog things. And that's normal and that's to be expected.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it can get frustrating and we can get upset about it. Some of the dog's behaviors can be really unwanted. So yeah, using food in order to teach is effective, humane. Dogs respond faster. They're more enthusiastic when it comes to working with us.
Yeah.
So it's a no-brainer.
Tanya, I'll tell you. So it's like you talk about my experience. So Tyler was my first dog. I did not have a dog growing up. And I got him as a puppy. So he was not toilet trained. And I live in an apartment. So, you know, you bring him in and all the carpets are rolled up and, you know, he's pooping and peeing, whatever. And so, you know, every 3 hours I start taking him outside. And, you know, again, he was my first dog. how do I interact with human beings? I talk to them. And if you do a good thing, you know, I'm appreciative and I encourage you to do a good thing. So, you know, I would try to talk them to Tyler Watt and, you know, time to go, boobies, all of that stuff, yeah. Right? And sometimes he would do it and sometimes he wouldn't do it. Then you go back upstairs and he immediately like poops in the living room.
Yeah.
And a friend came over like day three of my experience with this. And we go outside and I'm trying to reason with him. And she said, when he pees, why don't you give him a treat? Mm-hmm. In 3 days, the dog figured it out.
Yeah.
You don't pee inside, you pee outside because you get a treat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. he's getting a healthy treat. He's rewarded for good behavior. My stress level is going down. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a happy coexistence. Mm-hmm. And it goes through every type of training.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not only training. So the other thing, you know, just me being a new pet parent as well, is the whole concept of enrichment. Like, we lived in a small apartment building, and it's like this big.
Yeah.
And we got this giant dog, and so we were good at taking him for walks and doing all that, but there was, like, no mental stimulation. Mm-hmm. And so we quickly learned about using treats for enrichment. Mm-hmm. And it can be very simple. It's as simple as and it's funny because Fig gets ready for this. So after dinner, he will sit in the bedroom and just sit there, and he knows it's time to play hide and seek. So we close the door. We make a big production about closing the door and hide like little treats all over the place. And then he'll spend, you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes looking for them.
Yeah.
And it's fun because it tires him out. You know, he gets a little hit of dopamine from finding
the treats.
It's like
going to the gym.
Yeah.
And my goodness. And just watching him, we love it as well, too. And like, it all comes back to, you know, I hear people say, oh, you know, I got to take the dog for a walk. It's important. And that's good. But it's like up here, too.
Yeah.
Dogs live a very, I don't know. I don't know what the phrase is.
The brain's always on. So they need to be stimulated.
The brain's always on. It's like humans. It's like... Give them something to do. There's lots of ways you can, you know, play games with them or entertain them.
Yeah, in our past episode on overexcitement, we talked to another trainer, and she said sometimes that we project our needs onto our dog. Mm-hmm. So when we see our dog just laying on the ground looking bored, we're like, oh my God, if I was just laying on the ground too, I'd want to like go to the zoo or something. And so we sometimes wind up overexciting our dogs because we're projecting our own needs onto our dog, whereas the dog may be totally fine just laying on the ground, and we're just kind of overcompensating with maybe some of our guilt. And so obviously it's somewhere in the middle of those two things, but there could be this instinct to like overstimulate them because of the way we're looking at their lives compared to our own. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, but I think we can all agree that they do need some form of mental stimulation.
Absolutely.
Because it can build confidence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, same with humans. Mm-hmm. And I think what is the concept of, and I love this phrase, it's been around since the 60s, is contra freeloading.
Freeloading, yeah.
Yeah, it's such a funny word, right? But really what it means is animals and dogs in this instance like to hunt for their food. Mm-hmm. They like to work for it.
Yeah.
They prefer having food that they've worked for versus what was just given to them.
And I think so for us too. I think it's very satisfying when we work for our own food and we eventually capture it and consume it.
Sometimes it's nice when it comes.
Totally.
With the white tablecloth.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything.
Someone else does the dishes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I have friends that when it comes to dinner time, you know, they do that. They do a similar like hunting exercise, mm-hmm. or they go through certain little routines, which is fun as well.
Yeah.
And it's stimulating for the dog.
Yeah, I agree. We actually have an article on our blog page. If our listeners wanted to check it out, it's about those experiments that showed that dogs would rather work for food rather than take it freely available. And also I think it's just so interesting to observe like the different dogs and what their favorite activities are. With our dog, you have to admit that you because you guys have like your nice packages where, you know, you can get some treats together with some enrichment toys, and honestly we have a lot of variety of enrichment toys, but for our dog, the tricky treat balls, they're those red balls where you
amazing.
Put some treats inside, or in our case, we feed meals inside of the bigger one. Yeah. And this is our dog's absolute favorite.
He loves it.
Yeah, it's wild, right?
Yeah.
And it's so fun to watch them too. I love it.
Yeah, he loves it. He just like logs it around, and he has like his little like strategies on getting the food out. And we really incorporate it as a part of our routine, and it makes us happy to see him happy.
Yeah.
And enrichment. But you know, some dogs may be really into chewing, some dogs may be really into licking or sniffing. I mean, those are the main categories of enrichment. But just like with food rewards and different types of treats or different meats, I think it's still worth exploring and experimenting. What does your specific dog really love doing and providing more of it? Because, you know, not every dog is going to be into like playing fetch for 30 minutes. And maybe some dogs just need some calming, more relaxing activity that they can do in order to feel more tired and more satisfied with what they did today. So yeah, just taking it really personal, because it's very hard to say that this is what works for dogs when every dog is such an individual.
And it also doesn't have to be a toy that you like. It doesn't have to be anything expensive either.
Yeah.
It can be as simple as, you know, every time a box comes into our house, tissue paper, wrap it all up, and, you know, special delivery for him.
Yeah.
He comes and grabs it, takes away, tears it up. So you don't always have to.
Yes, absolutely.
To buy something. I think that's the key.
Yeah, you can get really creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just remembered the question in regards to the Mai Tai thing earlier. So let me get that while it's fresh in my mind. Obviously, when you're 5 years into it, you know, you're going to have a certain level of excitement, you know, that you're drawing upon that you had initially, but that could wane, and sometimes it needs to be replaced by some level of success or other kind of positively reinforcing things that are happening out into the world about your brand. So we talked about a lot of the tough things that you guys had to go through just to get it up. What are some of the surprising, rewarding experiences that you've had from this thing? Because as I mentioned, to go from 5 to 20 years, for example, it needs to be a mix of a variety of different feel-good things that your initial kind of enthusiasm might not be enough for. It has to be replaced by other things along the journey. And so what have some of those things been for you to make you feel like, oh, I'm on the right path and I'm excited about the future?
Wow. Again, another big question. For me, what motivates me, or what gives me that little boost, I guess we get some really nice emails, and I love brands, and there's certain products I really like, and I don't know, it's just something about me. I just don't think of emailing them and telling them. And we have a lot of people, and I think it's just an extension of their passion for their dog, that reach out and say some really nice things. A lot of dogs have allergies and have issues with certain foods, and so it's the pet parent's mom saying, like, you know what, I'm so lucky that you had issues with this, but he's never had tilapia before, and this worked, and we're going to continue to use that. Or just, you know, grateful for the limited ingredients. But we do get a lot of nice emails from people, and they're really like, oh, makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's that. And also, again, we work a lot with trainers, you know, like Tanya, and sort of the feedback that we get from trainers, you know, how much, you know, it helps in their kind of like everyday work, and that they can do it for clients. And so, you know, you sort of, you mentally, you have to make those, you know, a couple of steps in your head, but you realize, okay, so then pet parents are getting like well-trained dogs, and they're actually seeing results. And hopefully everybody's living in a more harmonious sort of place. And look, and then when you see sort of clients who order like every other month, they order your treats, and you know, then that's been going on for like 5 years, you realize people really care. Because I can't, look, your everyday grocery, sure, you buy the same stuff, but how many products can you name that you buy on a regular basis that are a nice to have, not a need to have?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
So that really is that's what mm-hmm. gives you that extra level of encouragement. Mm-hmm.
Love it.
And I also think that you guys have done a great a job at really providing that variety, right? So you have the meatballs, you add the fish, you added the goat cheese, now you're adding some jerky and some chews. And I think that's important because, you know, sometimes we may be using the best, highest value treat for our dog, but we've used it for a period mm-hmm. of time mm-hmm. and the dog is like, yeah. I really love it, but I'm kind of tired yeah. of it. So that thing over there is where I'm going to focus on. So just kind of keeping that variety and innovation in mind, mm-hmm. I think that people appreciate it. And that is another factor of keeping them keep coming back to you because they're seeing that you're adding more to it or you're improving on what you have. And that is important.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is we've had clients in trainers' house, even so they buy a lot of different types, but there's certain ones that they hold back. Like, you know, this one, you know, you only get, I might have a bag up there, but whoa, this is the holy grail.
Sure, yeah.
So that self-control on your side
yeah.
to make something special, you know, scarcity of resource, mm-hmm. right? It's a special thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's interesting. And we haven't done studies on this, but it seems like from when I was a kid, like dogs are just so much more allergic to things now as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you see people coming, you know, I can't do chicken. I can only do this, or I want to try different things.
Yeah.
That seems to be a rise. But I think, you know, with chicken, which is probably right, Ilya, chicken is the one we find the most of in terms
yeah.
of people.
Allergies and issues.
And there's definitely allergies and issues. And I think sometimes you got to be careful because I think their exposure to, for example, chicken, this isn't always the case. Like there are obviously genuine allergies out there, but I think some pet dogs react to chicken because the first thing they have is chicken meal, which is not, you know, really, really chicken. It's just, you know, kind of the bones and the skin of, it's typically feed grade chicken. So not human grade chicken mm-hmm. ground up and melted into a powder. And it can contain, you know, diseased or dead chickens, you know, the 4 Ds. What is it? Disabled, diseased, dead, dying, I think it is. so it's a powder and it's basically health, like it's a protein and it's safe to eat, mm-hmm. but it's not the most nutritious.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, dogs have reaction to that. Then the parents see the label and go, oh my goodness, chicken meal.
Yeah.
And say, oh, well, he has issues with chicken. And it's not always, it may be that part of the chicken or that might have concern with that. Mm-hmm. So it's good to experiment a little bit if you feel safe in doing so. Mm-hmm. But it really is interesting. There's a lot of allergies out there.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, now that we're on the topic of ingredients, let's kind of talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about buzzwords a little bit. I think for a lot of people, single ingredient and limited ingredient are kind of terms that not only people are more aware of, but they're kind of using that to kind of guide their next purchase decision, particularly as it relates to treats. What would you say, you know, let's say you didn't have a treat company, your friend called you up, you don't know about dog treats as dog owners, dog parents yourself. What are certain buzzwords, ingredients, either if it has it, then get it. If it has this, don't get it. What are some guidelines that you have just for your own selves and your own personal circle? Maybe it could be like a third party, like branding of an association. Like, what are some of those things that you tell people to look out for?
Yeah, I think most of the people know this by now, but like natural or all natural really doesn't have any meaning. Like there's no certification to say something's natural. So I think that's left to everybody's own devices in terms of what it means. Like organic is a little different. That legitimately has to do with the ingredients or the way it was produced. So that's a real, you know, that's a certification. There's no room for interpretation. But I would just say be wary of natural. Mm-hmm.
And I would add just, you know, the way we think about it is, again, how would you think about it if it was for human consumption? Mm-hmm. You know, would you find this ingredient in a grocery store? Mm-hmm. You know, whether it doesn't have to be raw, but if you were to cook it, would you give it to your kid? Mm-hmm. we think about our dogs the same way.
Yeah.
So, and look, there are definitely a lot of buzzwords. There's a lot of marketing out there. We kind of like the approach of take a step back and go back to basics. Dogs have been around a lot longer than all these buzzwords and all the different manufacturing processes and things like chicken meal. Mm-hmm. And they used to thrive and be healthy and live a long life. Why? Because they had simpler, you know, they were eating simpler ingredients that, you know, our great grandmothers understood.
Yeah.
So a little bit, go back to that. If you have no idea what this is, why are you giving it to your dog?
Mm-hmm. Well, one term that I feel like is kind of more emergent, and I know you guys use it as well, is this idea of U.S. sourcing and U.S. processing. Can you talk about like why that has become more popular in recent days?
Yeah. And so, look, for all our meat is USDA inspected, which means it's the same quality as human consumption. If you bring in meat from other countries, you have no idea, you know, what the standards mm-hmm. are. And then in terms of processing, you know, if it's made at a facility that's FDA approved, again, it means that it's the facility where food for humans can be made.
Yeah.
So to us, that's what matters as far as understanding that. Mm-hmm. Look, and fundamentally, we want to support local farmers and local manufacturers. So, you know, that is important to us. That's a company position. That's not necessarily a consumer position,
yeah.
But, you know, that's our view. But all the other things you talked about is just, it's the quality of the ingredients in, you know, the facilities where they're meat packaged, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So great. So I think we're about coming up on time. I want to be respectful of your guys' time. We're so grateful that you guys have spent your time with us today. Can you guys at least inform our audience what you guys have going on, what exciting things you have coming up? Obviously, anything about your brand in general, the floor is yours.
Karen?
Yeah, so we always have like new stuff coming. We've got a few things in the pipeline, but we just got to figure out and just kind of make sure they work. And just come and visit us. So we're at, we're online, www.figandtyler.com. We're also sold through a handful of trainer studios as well. And if you ever have any questions, there's like a little email on the bottom. Just reach out, and because Ilya and I answer all the questions ourselves. So just reach out. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much again for joining us. I think we've learned a lot, not only about you guys, but about the industry as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure.
You've been great hosts, guys. Thank you very much.